Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 49, episode 2 of The Daily Zeitgeist for Tuesday, September 18th, 2018. My name's Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. It's the Eye of O'Brien. It's the Daily Zeitgeist rising up to drop the freshest of our hot takes. And a second-rate podcast stalks Miles Gray in the night, and he's watching us all with the eye. Jack O'Brien. All right. That is courtesy of Hannah Soltis.
Yeah.
And I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Miles had the time of Zeitgeist. And I never felt this great before.
I don't know if I did that again, but that is really from Chapman Rice, a.k.a. Goddess, and I just had to do it again.
It's worth repeating.
It's just worth doing. It's just worth doing. And that might be the first time. But either way, hello and welcome.
Hello. Hey, Miles.
Hi.
It's Jack. Good to see you again.
Good to see you as well.
In our third seat, we are thrilled to have the stand-up great. You know him from Drunk History and Crashing. He is Mr. Wayne Fetterman.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hey. Thanks for being here.
We had too many credits we could list for you.
Yeah, I know. Let's just go through them all.
Everything.
No, we don't have to. My question for you is Survivor is Eye of the Tiger, but I don't know if I know who sang Time of Your Life.
I don't either. I just know it as
Jennifer
that song.
Warner?
Yeah, it's from Dirty Dancing.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, obviously, but I mean, was it Jennifer Warren? Something like that?
Yes. No, Jennifer Warnes and Bill Medley.
Warnes.
Yeah. Yes.
Bill Medley. That's what it is. Okay.
What happened to Bill Medley?
I don't know.
Did he have
like
any other hits? That's weird. That's why
at
first I was like, maybe I should feel bad for not knowing who did it. But then when I read those names, I'm like, those don't really
ring
a bell.
No, I do remember. Okay, it was close. That's close.
Yeah.
But Survivor, for sure. Everyone knows that, right?
Oh, the greatest.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment, Wayne. But first, we're going to tell our listeners what we are about to talk about. We're going to talk about the fight of the century that happened over the weekend between Tom Arnold and Mark Burnett.
Oh. That was not the Canelo?
No.
There was that, too.
There was also that.
Heard about that.
We're going to talk about how senators from both sides are reacting to all the Kavanaugh breaking news.
Right.
We are going to talk about Trump's feelings towards women, just in general.
Yes.
We're going to talk about Sean Penn's feelings toward the Me Too movement. A gentleman named Randy Credico, who you may not know, but you should. And finally, we are going to talk about the four distinct personality types. Miles, I've been waiting a long time for this. Myers-Briggs is just complete garbage.
It's been punted to the curb.
Has been replaced by an actual scientific study of personality types. And we're also going to talk about Mark Wahlberg. But first, Wayne, we like to ask our guest, what is something from your search history that's revealing about who you are as a human being?
Oh, this we're going to reveal?
Yes. Well, we'll just be judging you.
Well, it's the difference between the word aesthetic and aesthetic.
Ooh.
E with the A. Just looked it up today.
Okay.
Because I was writing an article.
Okay. Right.
And someone corrected my aesthetic with an aesthetic.
Oh.
And I was like,
So what is aesthetic?
Yes. Well, aesthetic is, you know, the general idea behind something, the general the way it's, and aesthetic is the exact same thing, except that's the way they say it in Britain.
Really?
Oh, just the spelling.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
For a second I was like, do I not know this?
I know. So I thought I didn't, because I was correct, because somebody sent this article, and he was like, I think you mean aesthetic. I was like, oh.
Wow.
And I love being corrected. I love learning things.
Yeah.
I always spell it A-E.
I think I do, too.
No, it's... Well,
but in America, we spell it in with just the E.
Mm-hmm.
You also spell color with a U. Though,
I do, so and favorite with a U.
Yeah.
I'm a bit of an Anglophile as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, I have
congratulations
a few.
On the royal wedding.
Thank you so much. And I have a bit of rubbish in the boot of my car I have to get later. It's an estate car.
What is something you think is overrated, Wayne?
Okay, this is going to turn off most of your listeners.
All right.
Okay, this is going to be very controversial.
Like to
hit the controversial theme music.
Dun, dun, dun.
Okay, that's not
there it.
It
is.
Here we go. The movie Shawshank Redemption.
Wow.
Yes, that's overrated.
Now tell me, how did you arrive at this?
Because I saw the movie. Because I had to sit through it. And then there was a whole wave of people loving it to the point where I go on IMDb and they have that own rating service. It's usually, if it's not number one, it's usually The Godfather. They go back and forth. Correct?
Really? Yes.
Yeah. I didn't know.
Shawshank is now regarded, in the world of IMDb as the.
Does that mean like the search heat around it, or they have a ranking of like what they believe is the? Yeah. Okay,
it's crowdsourced by Americans, so right. I am going against America on this one. Yes,
and so sometimes that is an okay thing to do.
Oh. Right. Well, in this case, I'm sure I'm going to get some heat on, but that's my feeling. Yeah. I felt like it was not a great movie. I didn't think it was. Again, I know people obviously. Adore it. But prison movie where there's an evil warden. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, unheard of.
Right. Unheard of.
Yeah.
Can you believe it?
I can't
Definitely
believe it.
Doesn't vibe well with my idea of prison.
Yeah, right, this is really breaking some boundaries here. Okay.
Yeah. I was a fan of the strong female characters in the
you
movie.
Mean on the poster on the wall?
Yeah, exactly. What is something you think is underrated?
The comedian Paul F. Tompkins.
Yeah.
No, you think you disagree?
No.
I just feel like that guy is just
brilliant.
Genius.
He's
I don't
brilliant.
Know why he's not a famous comedian. All of, I
he's
mean,
like
in,
a yeah comedian. If you like comedy, you know Paul F. Tompkins, but he's not a household name.
Right. Exactly.
I just think he's off the chart brilliant.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. One of my favorite.
He is.
One of
okay,
my favorite
so we're in
performers.
Agreement.
Yeah.
Do you,
of
would you
type.
Say he's underrated?
I would.
Underknown. I guess, like, I feel like it's hard.
Yeah, you're right.
Some way, even like when you talk about Shawshank, like part of me where I agree with you, the overratedness is how much they fucking play that movie all the time. And I'm like, whoa, what the fuck is going on here?
Right.
But it's rated. It's highly rated.
It's rated. it's held up in high regard. But with Paul F. Tompkins, he's like one of those people where I feel like, obviously, if you know comedy, you like comedy. You know who PFT is.
Right.
But like, I feel like he deserves to be in that next wave or that next circle of sphere of influence.
How is he not on talk shows all the time?
Yeah. Exactly.
He's incredible.
He's constantly on podcasts and is just always good.
I think he's on every podcast except ours.
His batting average is so high.
Oh,
yeah.
So it's anyway. So that's I'm
and I love hearing him improvise. Like his improv skill is just I just crack up when he's on
we're
Comedy
all
Bang
on the
Bang.
Same page.
He's amazing.
Yeah,
we all agree with each. All right, guys. All right, let's wrap it up,
everybody. Go out.
Makes for great
Welcome to the podcasting. Comedy bubble. Yeah.
One of my favorite sort of underrated podcasts every year is when Paul F. Tompkins and Scott Aukerman do the countdown of the top comedy bang bang moments of the year. And it's great just like the in-studio moments when they're just talking about the year and like not really talking about anything are the greatest. And it's just Paul F. Tompkins being Paul F. Tompkins, really.
Yeah.
Some people call him Paul F. Tompkins.
Yes.
You know.
Oh.
Just so you know.
That's how it's pronounced.
So his friends call him.
Yeah, like William Hamacy.
Yeah, right.
Same thing.
There you go.
I thought it was Paul F. Tompkins.
Oh, right.
Yeah, that was an excusing way of Paul. It's Paul F.
Paul F. Tompkins?
Hi, Paul F. Tompkins. Good to meet you.
Great to meet you.
Sorry, Paul F.?
When we do have him on, that's how we will pronounce it.
And the whole time waiting for him to be like, is this a joke? Or are you guys doing
right. And finally, Wayne, what is a myth? What's something people think is true?
Here's a myth that fast food will kill you.
All right.
And let me tell you my canary in the coal mine. All right. Is that the correct metaphor?
Sure.
Probably.
It's a gentleman by the name of, he's one of the richest guys in the world.
Mm-hmm.
He has a, I don't know why I'm blanking on his name. I want to say Buffett.
Warren Buffett. Yeah.
Warren Buffett.
Yeah.
Loves McDonald's, huh?
Eats it every day.
Yeah,
eats
right.
it every day.
Every
Does
morning.
Now, if there's anyone who has an incentive to be healthy.
Right.
Yeah.
And stay around.
Yeah.
It's Warren Buffett.
Mr. Omaha,
Berkshire
Nebraska
Hathaway.
Himself.
Yeah.
I drove by his house when I was in Omaha.
How'd it look?
It's very normal.
Humble.
I mean, it's a big house or whatever, but not like where you're like, oh my goodness, this estate, this palatial manor.
Right. No, he has like neighbors.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
it's not like
I drove my friend who was like, you want to see Warren Buffett's house? And we went, and I was like, cool. We can throw rocks at it.
Do you think you could drive by Gates' house or Bezos?
Oh, no.
I mean, Mark Zuckerberg specifically bought all the houses around his
house
because somebody was thinking about building something that would have been able to see into a part of his house.
Yeah.
And so he was like, nah.
It's like a common practice for the wealthy. It's called the buffer zone. of just buying properties
Buffett
around.
And does not.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Does not value
this
the buffer
is the no
zone.
Buff zone.
No,
yeah.
No.
Wait, what's his thing? McDonald's every morning?
Every morning. Yep, yeah. Breakfast. Oh. I think the McMuffin. He's just like, he values these certain things. That's kind of what he's great at, is finding value. Like, it's basically by like doing a lot of math and reading every newspaper.
Right.
But he.
This is what I'm saying. But yeah. If you talk to people, people are like, I would never eat that poison. I'm like,
right.
Well, William.
He's doing
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He's doing fine.
And yeah, Coca-Cola is like one of his big picks that he invested in way back.
Right.
And
he
makes tons of money on it.
Wow.
And he drinks 5 of those a day.
Yeah. Coca-Cola with, and he brings a little bottle.
You know all about this.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I'm a big fan. Brings a little bottle of like
of
cherry syrup around with him and like pours it
oh,
in.
Oh, what?
It's just like very old fashioned.
Coke?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that's good news for Donald Trump, I guess,
yeah.
Who also loves McDonald's
right, right,
and
right.
Coke.
Yeah.
So
by cherry syrup, I mean whiskey.
Oh, right.
Right. We know. We,
wink.
You guys got
right.
It.
It's promethazine, right. Actually. It's scissorp.
All right, guys. There's a lot going on right now,
yes.
And we have to get into the news. Not since Axl Rose attacked Tommy Hilfiger have I been this uninvested but morbidly curious about a fist fight.
Wait, Axl Rose fought Tommy Hilfiger?
Yeah, at a club like in the early 2000s for some reason. It was like when you hadn't heard of Axl Rose in a long time, and then somebody showed a picture of him and he had cornrows.
Oh,
I was like,
yeah.
Oh,
I remember that.
Oh, wow. Anyways, Tom Arnold got into a fight with reality maven, magnate Mark Burnett.
Yeah.
Who is the producer of The Apprentice.
Yes, keep going.
And what else?
Shark Tank, Survivor.
He also produced that show a couple years back where the Antichrist was played by an Obama lookalike. And everyone was like, huh. That's
interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, they ran into each other at a Emmy fundraiser party, and you know, Tom Arnold has that show on Viceland where he's trying to get the tapes.
Yep.
Basically, where suddenly we're going to be surprised if we hear Trump talking like a racist or behaving like a racist or general miscreant. But it's always good to have their physical receipts. So anyone who wants to deny can look it in the eye. But yeah, apparently they saw each other. They got to tussling, I guess. Literally, he was tweeting stuff about, like, yeah, his torn pink shirt and, like, missing gold chain, whatever. He's like, I'm going to go to the police. The LAPD said, we have no incident on file, or he has clearly not filed a report with us. But the other interesting things is that Tom Arnold was like, yeah, Kevin Bacon was a witness. It's got, has, like, it almost, it's a parody of itself. But the whole thing's kind of getting weird. I get Tom Arnold has a show going on, but... it's just kind of funny to me. And also now he's like retweeting so many things about how Mark Burnett is actually connected to Putin and things like that.
And he was before, right? That's been a theory.
They were, he was apparently in talks with first making a show about some kind of like space program, like having to do with Russian astronauts.
Right.
And then he had another
They're
show.
They're called cosmonauts.
Cosmonauts,
some
yes,
kind
of correction.
Just seeing it.
Yeah, whatever. Space guys. And then he wanted to do another show that was like humanizing like these like really... wild government leaders like Fidel Castro and Putin was what person he wanted to show
yeah.
And was saying like, I just want a show that emphasized, you know, it's devoid of armies and politics. Rather, it would focus on, quote, the humans, the nature, the animals of the nation. So, I mean, that would have been pretty cool to see a humanizing show about Putin.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Weird.
I really wish I could see how this boiled over. Was just him being like in his face, with probably getting in his face with the camera, being like,
well, I assume
hey, when are you going to put the tapes out?
I assume his show is based on Burnett releasing these tapes.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
What else?
The whole point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there going to be an editor that he's trying to.
Right.
I don't know. Well, yeah.
Wasn't Tom Arnold on Celebrity Apprentice?
He was. I'm
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
So,
he was.
And that's what he's basing it on, that his experience.
Right.
That
and overhearing Trump.
And he knows they're recorded.
Right. And Mark Burnett, I mean, he's, you know, a Trump fan, so he's
he
refusing
is.
To release
because
those
of the
tapes.
Putin thing. Or you, how are you drawing that conclusion?
Well, he's adamant about not releasing those tapes, and I feel like clearly they have some kind of relationship where
they
he,
worked closely on yeah. The Apprentice. And
I mean, Mark Burnett was already huge in reality, but I mean, the Apprentice
Survivor.
Really, yeah, Survivor.
I feel like Survivor was the one, right?
Yeah, it was
right.
the one that everyone was going,
and that was
crazy
known
for
basically the photography where the sky would move really fast.
Yeah,
those time lapse.
Yeah. Okay, I remember that show,
and people became more and more emaciated and tan over time.
Right.
It was always fun to like look at what they look like at the beginning of the show, and then by the end they're just like super sunburned
right.
And like rail thin.
Yeah. But there's a midpoint where they look great. And that's right. That's where they
really
make
that. That's called the Survivor Servation Sweet Spot.
Yeah. That Survivor glow up. No word on who won this fight or...
I mean, honestly, they both lose for getting in a fight.
And Triple G lost.
Right.
Yeah.
And Triple G lost.
And Triple G. That was the coolest fight, huh?
I didn't watch it.
I did not watch it
I was at a soccer game, and I just heard people getting, like, people screaming.
Wait, you sure said not a match?
Soccer match. You're right. No, you're right.
What is going on? Is this your first time?
I Americanize the stuff for people because I say football or whatever, and they don't know what's going on.
He actually has a thick British accent.
That I have to hide.
He's just hiding it.
I'm trying to sound more American.
Because they call it the pitch, right?
Right.
Yeah, the pitch. Yeah.
There's no field.
No, it's the pitch. It's the pitch.
Okay, okay. So I'm sorry. I'm a jerk. Go ahead.
No. And it was, I mean, I just saw what the actual announcement was, but there were people like watching in the stands. Like people were doing the funny thing of like friends were watching on pay-per-view and then they were just FaceTiming the screen for them.
Yes, yeah.
So they were at the game like watching.
And there's
like,
no way to get around that, right?
No, there's absolutely no way.
That is the greatest.
Pay-per-view wise.
Yeah, they don't know what, you know, how you're using your private stream of communication.
But I saw people do it on Facebook.
Like those ones tend to get taken down because it's more public versus like just my phone to your phone. No one's there to really monitor
peer to peer.
Peer to peer, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that a tape coming out of Trump saying the N-word and saying awful things on the set of The Apprentice would change anything?
I mean, I'd like to think that we're in a world where people are reasonable enough to then do something, but there have been so many incidences where any other politician, they would hold their feet to the fire. But I think it would have to be so bad that the GOP finally finds their spine and they're like, okay, we can't just embrace this uranium rod and just die from exposure to it. He's radioactive.
Right.
But I don't think it's going to change anything. Just the same way, I don't think if the P tape was real and came out, I don't think people would care about that either.
Yeah. What would that be? It would be him watching people pee on a bed?
Yeah, who knows? Yeah.
I feel like that aesthetically would be just like
aesthetically, buzzword.
Aesthetically would just be uninteresting. Whereas if you had a tape of him, because everybody who's heard him speak on the set of The Apprentice are like, holy shit, this guy's just like a monster. Like he's just constantly saying like the most objectionable things just conversationally. I feel like in the context of him just, you know, unleashing this stream of horrifying, you know, words. Like, it's not just going to be a tape of him saying the word out of context.
No,
like,
you're going to get
you're going to get a whole thing of him just sounding like a really bad person. I'm with Tom Arnold. I'm Team Arnold on this one. I want the guy
on what?
Release.
On the fight?
Beating up?
Beating up
Mark Burnett.
Okay,
and
sure.
Also on getting that tape.
Wait, on assault.
Team assault.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
Did you hear about the peanut that was going through the park?
What's that?
One was assaulted.
All right.
So there was...
And there's no way to get that back, right? That can't be edited out.
Nope.
Oh, yeah,
that's committed.
I will be dragged.
I will be dragged on the internet for that. But I think on one level, though, if the tape does come out, it's harder for people to deny his racism.
Of course.
Right. So there's that. But, you know, this guy is on tape saying stuff that he grabs women by the pussy, and that didn't do anything. And he's been credibly accused of all kinds of things, and yet the people who are supposed to check his power.
Here's the crazy thing is, and I don't know if you guys are old enough to remember this, but there was a presidential candidate named Howard Dean.
Mm-hmm.
He was the governor of New
Hampshire.
Was it Vermont or New Hampshire? It was Vermont?
Yes.
Okay, and he literally was leading, and then he just screamed, and the mic... You know, they caught the room mic. I mean, the mic as opposed to the room mic, and it sounded crazy. And that was the end of his.
We're going to Michigan, and to Washington D.C. to take the White House.
And everyone was like, "Dude, get this guy the fuck out of here!
You can't be president."
Yeah,
right.
I remember. Yeah, because it was right around the time this was like the second election I was able to vote in, so I was pretty checked in.
Okay.
And yeah, and I remember being like, "That was funny." He sounded wild.
But literally disqualified.
Yeah.
Somebody did a
The binder's
really...
full of women comment that Mitt Romney did. Yeah. That he took a huge ding for that.
Right. Yeah. Somebody did a recounting of the sort of Dean roar heard around the world and interviewed people who were in the room who like didn't hear him
scream
make
at
that
all.
Sound at all. It was just like he like basically made a sound that wouldn't have sounded loud in person, but he like made it real close to the mic, and so it just sounded really crazy. Well, and it was also like the crowd was really loud, but you couldn't hear the crowd.
Yeah. It was enthusiastic. And I mean, because he started getting into that wrestler like tone. It was a little bit more than like, okay. And we're going to go to Michigan and blah, blah. It was like, you know.
No, he was definitely like.
I love it.
Feeling the crowd's energy.
Yeah, and it's but that's where we
no,
are.
I'm just saying that's where we're
how
on
quickly
now.
We've
yeah,
shifted.
We
where
the,
that used to be an ender.
I move on her like a
yeah.
bitch and all
yeah.
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And people are like, well, that could be fake or I don't know. It's locker room talk. This
yeah.
guy just went ah, and we're like, no,
no,
you're unstable, sir.
I do wonder if because the response to the pussy grabbing tape was. Such that it was like, oh, well, I guess a lot of people talk like that still because people were like, oh, that's locker room talk. And people are just like, yeah, okay, good with that. But I don't think a lot of people use the N-word casually. Like that seems like more of a
no, I mean,
outlier.
You are definitely not going to be able to spin that.
Right.
I mean, so, unless you're in the locker room of like the KKK.
Go on, Tom Arnold. Let's do it. Let's find that tape. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back, and the Brett Kavanaugh vote confirmation got a little more interesting.
It was smooth sailing
yeah,
just a few days ago.
Somehow. Yeah.
So over the weekend, well, I guess multiple weeks ago, I guess it was back in July, Senator Feinstein got an anonymous letter from somebody who recounted being sexually assaulted by Brett Kavanaugh in high school, and then that person finally came forward and said who she was.
Oh, we're going to see this. She's going
to
testify.
Yeah, she's
there's
going
no,
to.
There's
so her name
no
is Christine Blasey Ford.
Yeah.
Is that Blasey?
Yeah. Or, I think, forgive us if we
Blasey is a
this
dope
this is going
name.
To be high political drama.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Right? I mean, literally, this nominee is in the balance.
It is now
this
because.
This is the only disqualifier could be if. She seems credible enough.
Right, and she took an FBI, a lie detector test, which we know lie detector tests can be a little bit iffy
scientifically. When you say we, what do you mean by that?
Huh?
When you said we know.
Just in general, that the idea of
you're
polygraph
saying I know
tests.
That?
I think some people do.
All right, you said we.
Okay, do you feel that polygraph tests are 100%?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't like being spoken
for. Yeah,
for.
No, you're not. I'm not speaking for you, but I think people have publicly disputed lie detector tests.
Yeah.
Not to say that that means that she's lying.
Right.
But she's clearly here to show that she's being as honest as possible. She has nothing to gain from this. She's clearly, this is only going to be something that is going to be traumatic for her because, as you've seen, like people are already doxing her. And trying to tear her down. I think there's been some senators who have said, well, why did it take so long?
Right.
Which is the dumbest fucking way to question somebody who's coming out with this kind of thing. But yeah, now it's gotten to the point where people like Lindsey Graham or Jeff Flake, they're starting to be like, well, we should probably hear from this person at this point.
How do you not want to hear from this
person? I mean, up until this point, I thought they were going to
bury it.
Yeah, because Chuck Grassley seemed in no way interested. There was that weird letter that came out from 65 women that had gone to high school with, but when they dug deeper, they weren't all from the same high school.
Right.
So it was just like this.
Well, he went to an all-boys high school, correct?
Right.
Yeah, right. So just people.
So a lot of guys have transitioned since then.
That or, yeah, or these were people
amazing.
They paid.
Good for them. Very progressive.
Very good. I'm endorsing that.
Yeah. And now it's to the point where, there are many calls from, you know, just a couple GOP senators, but most of the
Dems.
Somebody
has to know. I mean, somebody I'm not talking about senators, but there's got to be some kid who remembers that party or.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's not
of
that
course.
Long ago.
No.
Right.
I mean,
it was
36 years ago.
It was. Right, 36 years ago, but I mean, it is clearly a traumatic event in her past that she has, you know, that her life has had to be oriented around,
right.
You know, it's a, like in the way that all traumas sort of change how we live our lives. And like, that's the question I have is she goes up, she says, this is something that happened to me. I've been dealing with it for decades. I was in therapy when I first talked about it, like to my husband 6 years ago, and specifically called him out. And then he's going to come out and say, No, that didn't happen. But like my drunken recollection of it is better than her like actual right. recollection of it. And
well, at first he said this absolutely false, and then he's like, but then I then the person came forward, which seems to me that he does remember this person in some manner.
Oh, okay. He said, so his latest quote though is, "I'm willing to talk to the Senate Judiciary Committee in any way the committee deems appropriate to refute this false allegation." From 36 years ago, and defend my integrity, which I think it's interesting that he chose to throw in the from 36 years ago, just because it seems like that is going to be one of the tacks they take, is to say, well, why now? Right. Why are you doing this now?
Well, I know. Yeah, I think a lot of people, at least from the White House, would rather not have her testify in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee because they're like optically their people are going to be sympathetic. Yeah, no shit.
Yes.
But like. Don't this person, and Kellyanne Conway surprisingly was like, I think the woman should be heard.
Right.
Which
I don't can't imagine any other avenue.
Yeah. But I've seen the Republicans have been so brazen through this process, right. though, at the time, that I wouldn't have been surprised if Chuck Grassley, considering that there were so many documents that they chose to suppress,
right,
be like, no, it's been too late. They should have brought it up sooner. It doesn't matter what this person went through. And this, even though this is a lifetime appointment for someone who's trying to, who could possibly shift. The legal landscape of this country. Well, let's just get it done.
Yeah. They're being quiet now because they're waiting to see if they can get away with just pushing it through. And it
they could. No one could outright right now just say no to. I mean, Chuck Grassley kind of did say, well, this is really late in the game. But, well, you know, I think it's something that definitely has to be heard. And it's, you know, people were showing like just sort of when you look at what the majority looks like for the Senate Judiciary Committee, it's all men. There's not even a woman on there.
Nice.
And of course, their sentiments are gonna like they're
Kamala
focused on
Hall,
getting this for the majority on the Republicans.
Oh, for the Republicans. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So he was meeting at the White House earlier today. We're recording this on Monday, but
he was meeting. He was sweating.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's no good version.
It has nothing to do with what he's going to deny it.
Right.
It's all about there's a third thing.
Yeah.
That's. Yeah, that's
right.
Why it sucks so hard for her. This is like, I mean, to have to relive your trauma on the most national stage. Like
100%,
Anita Hill was like turned into like a punchline slash, you know, she's like a household name because she had a similar situation. And this is like a private trauma that this person has chosen to, you know, come forward with and not really even chosen because she wanted to remain anonymous, but then she started, like, as she was leaving class, a BuzzFeed reporter approached her, and, you know, it was just, it seemed like only a matter of time before her name came out.
Right.
So,
unmasked.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's the other man that she implicated in the allegation was, like, there was a classmate who, like, then
also
turned the
music up.
Also
a famous conservative figure.
Yeah, right. And, like,
what does
wrote
he
a
say?
Well, he's already, like, they were going through just his sort of general stance on things, and he's tried to discredit past people who have accused men of sexual assault. So he's kind of firmly rooted in, like, the, well, they don't know, blah, blah, blah. Right. And he has, like, a book that is, like, called, like, Wasted, like, Tales of a Gen X Drunk or something like that, where there's, like, a pseudonym. Like, there's a guy called Bart O'Kavanaugh.
So he's openly, like, a recovered alcoholic or a recovering alcoholic who was, like, during my high school years, like, I was constantly blacked out and, you know. But yeah, he has these stories of a guy whose name is what?
Bart O'Kavanaugh. There's a mention of Bart O'Kavanaugh. There in this book, it says, Shag scored a hit, then handed me the glass. I drank. If you were standing anywhere near a quarters game, you could get picked even if you don't want to play or weren't paying attention. So how do you like prep? Mary asked. It's cool. Do you know Bart O'Kavanaugh? Yeah, he's around here somewhere. I heard he puked in someone's car the other night. Yeah, he passed out on his way back from a party. So, I mean, I don't know what that means, but I think, I don't know if Brett Kavanaugh can say, oh, I don't know anything. I've never done anything like that.
I've never done anything illegal, I think is one of the things. Or I think Judge, the friend who turned up the music.
Aaron Judge?
Aaron Judge. No, I think it's
Mark
Judge.
Mark Judge.
Mark
Judge.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I'm not following it close enough.
Is Aaron Judge the baseball
player? Baseball
player,
yes.
Yeah. I was like, wow.
The Yankees.
Yeah. So Mark Judge was saying something about, like, I didn't know him to engage in these sorts of illegal behaviors. But at that time, like in the high school yearbook, Kavanaugh was voted treasurer of the Keg City Club. Or I don't know. This is what his yearbook said. So maybe this was just like a funny, like an inside joke, but Treasure of the Keg City Club, 100 kegs or bust.
Okay.
Like something to do with Beach Week Committee, which Beach Week is just where all these prep school, like privileged kids go to the beach from the DC area and just get wasted for a week. And also like something with the police in Rehoboth, which is where the Beach Week happens. So, you know, I mean, whatever.
I just think at the very least, the Republicans have to allow this person to be heard and properly just at some level have this process have some kind of shred of respectability to it. Yeah. Because the steamrolling thing we saw, it was like all this other stuff had to get unearthed. Cory Booker was like threatening to release documents that were
that are
classified.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I know, Spartacus. I know who he is. Right. This is the closest I'll get to my Spartacus moment.
My Spartacus moment. Okay.
You don't say that. You just you just have the
it's
moment.
Like, are you wearing a Booker 2020 t-shirt? Yeah. And I just think, you know, at this point, it's, I mean, not nice, but it's good to see that there are some people on the right that are showing some shred of decency to be like, not just do the thing that I thought they were going to do, which is be like, ignore it.
They can't do
but,
that.
You know, right. I'm sure if the White House, if they were going to play it the way they wanted to, they would probably just try and obscure this move on. Or what they'll do is just try and smear her, which
so
is usually
saying
what happens.
Move on from Me Too.
Move on
yes,
from Me Too.
There you go. And, you know, Kellyanne Conway, I think you were just referring to, was...
Only she's the hero.
She's like the voice she's of reason hero. In this case, which is crazy. But she was saying, like, don't attack her. Don't insult her. Let's let her
Well, anyone with it, you know.
Yeah. And, I mean, even... Trump seems to be somewhat reasonable on this
right.
Because he said, and I'm sure somebody had to sit him down and, you know, direct him with shiny objects and treats, you know, that this was what he had to say. But he basically said that, you know, if it needs to be delayed, it needs to be delayed.
Yeah.
So he's acknowledging it's a serious thing. And actually, it looks like they are now saying that they will both testify on Monday, so a week from yesterday. So, yeah, it will officially be delayed. So that's good, at least, that they're not trying to just, like, jam it in under the wire.
Well, I mean, they couldn't, like we were saying. It's literally the least you can do when something like this comes up, especially right. when, you know, with Al Franken, they were very quick to just believe the accusers and move forward with it. At the very least, they need to extend that same sort of practice to this process.
Yeah. Something that just on this week's Ezra Klein podcast,
yes.
that he had the philosopher Martha Nussbaum on, and she was talking about the politics around anger and also the politics around disgust, and she kind of crystallized this thing for me, the degree to which Trump is sort of waging a civil rights battle against women, just using sort of the tools of the zeitgeist, like ideas and just the way, like the language he uses. So Nussbaum was talking about just sort of disgust as an emotion in the context of how people use it as like around political fear. And she pointed out that there's like a long history using disgust to subjugate people. It's easy to forget that there are like visceral aspects of racism from before and during the civil rights movement in America, with white people thinking people of color were like less clean, and this is why they made them eat and drink in different physical locations and use different bathrooms. Like that wasn't just a way to make their lives less convenient.
Right.
They were, you know, the idea of sharing a bathroom was like grossed them out. And then more recently, America has seen this with like gay rights. Like I remember in the early 2000s, Dave Chappelle joke that was just, he was like, gay sex is gross to me.
Right.
I don't have anything against it. It's just gross. And everyone laughed. And it's just like,
yeah, you can't.
Yeah. And then, you know, in other countries, India's caste system, they have a whole caste that is the untouchables, and they're deemed untouchable because they're viewed as like dirty and unsanitary. And she pointed out anyways that Trump uses language and just sort of his whole attitude towards women. He refers to them at, like women who are unattractive as disgusting, and like focuses on their like bleeding, both with regards to their menstrual cycle and with Megyn Kelly, or Mika Brzezinski's recovery from surgery.
Yeah.
Is like she was leaking blood out of her face.
Right.
And like all sorts of Hillary Clinton, like the fact that she took a bathroom break during the debates was like made a big deal of, and like any illnesses or like frailty, like he made a big deal of. And it's just like using these visceral ideas and emotions to, I don't know, other women, and in a way that seems kind of retrograde and right. like shockingly, like
did
I guess
you listen to this podcast?
Yeah, yeah.
And did it resonate with you?
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Okay.
I mean, I wonder if, I don't know if he's sophisticated enough to know that and use his rhetoric disgusting. To do that more than he's a germaphobe and doesn't respect women. And so that's how he's going to talk. But that's the effect.
Right.
You know
that's
what I mean?
That's the effect. Exactly.
I could see how also knowing like his like germophobia, how he would think someone going to the bathroom is just like so gross. He seems like someone who's like, oh my God, the person went to the, ugh.
Right.
What are, they're going to get near me?
Yeah.
They have like poo all over them or something. I don't know. Like that's, he's just
He's a weird guy.
He's got a lot of interesting tactics that he doesn't even know what he's doing, and they're working.
Right. Yeah.
You think they're working?
I mean, I think with his base, I think for sure, because a lot of these people, there is a lot of overlap in the way they will even then refer to these people or the reasons that they use to discredit them.
No, I meant more like with independence and stuff.
Oh, no, I don't think so. I mean, I think clearly now at this point, his rhetoric has split people into the people who will just believe anything and the people who are repulsed
right.
have probably at this point been
I don't know.
Repulsed.
I'm curious.
The day after the Access Hollywood tape came out, there was a group, like the New Yorker profiled this town in Colorado where this huge like Women for Trump movement sprung up. And it actually started the day after the Access Hollywood tape because they were like, you know, they didn't want to be told by the media how
right.
they should feel about women's roles and like whether that was okay or like have their own morality policed. So I think things are turning into a way that it's more clearly defined like women against this kind of thinking. But he's clearly tapped into something. And
yeah.
it just seems like the record number of women candidates in the 2018 midterms, the Women's March, the Me Too movement, and then now with the Kavanaugh thing, it just seems like we're really polarizing around this way Trump views women versus like the way women would prefer to be viewed.
Wayne, do you think that it's that his rhetoric is bringing in more independence? Because you seemed
know.
A little skeptical.
I am a little skeptical.
Right.
I'm not sure. I mean, I looked, you know, I just saw a thing where he was like, gaining with Hispanic voters and he's gaining with the African-American voters. And I'm like, I'm not just because I live in like anti-Trump land. Like that's
right.
where I live. So I'm always like, all right, let me just try to look outside that a little bit. And, you know, I'm not in any way like super political, you know, but
right.
I'm just like, I look at his, you know, he's still in the 40s, you know, for the most part. And so I'm just shocked again.
Right.
And Howard Dean, like, you know, it's like, so I'm like, I'm just not quite so sure. And he's also like, those people that are against abortion are solid, you know, they're locked.
Yeah,
they're one issue
the end of time.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people who are for choice, and they're locked in already.
Right.
So what I'm talking about is those people in the middle that are just like,
right.
oh, this is the way my, you know.
Yeah, well, I think those people are probably going to be brought in with other issues that aren't so tied. Like, I think Medicare right. has been the biggest thing that other people have kind of come around to.
He beat Hillary Clinton. You know
yeah,
what
right.
I mean? And all of this, there's nothing new that's really come out other than since then. And everyone I know thought it was just like horrible. There's no possible
way. Well, I think
way.
That was, yeah, because conventional thinking around how these elections would work were like, oh, this guy has way too many negatives against him. That'll
right.
probably affect the electorate. And then you realize that his sort of pseudo-populism thing he was doing
this
to
is
run
what I'm, this, the,
was
so
resonating.
So again, all these things this lady's talking about, I don't know if that necessarily, again, will translate.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know if it's
Nussbaum.
I think it's Nussbaum, and I think she. It was just a useful way of understanding the dynamic that of like how his language works.
And also, I think his daughter is very popular.
Yeah,
I really think she is a. I think she's a big part of his success, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I think they're trying to deploy her in as many districts for the midterms, too.
Oh,
because,
they are?
Yeah, because they know
okay.
with him, he's kind of a third rail, but they can, in certain races,
yeah, yeah,
other
yeah.
times he can go and people are going to turn out. But
mm-hmm.
also getting her into the suburbs is sort of, I think, something that I've read, too, that she's more effective in the suburbs with more educated people.
Okay, that's
than
what I'm saying.
Trump.
So I just don't think it's, again, I don't know why we're talking politics with me, but that's just my feeling, just kind of looking at it as the overall,
yeah.
like, maybe. I mean, he can beat Hillary Clinton. That's a pretty big
yeah.
machine that he was able to beat. So
yeah,
I think yeah, we'll see. Well, these midterms will be a very indicative of what the temperature is, and based on everything we're seeing, just with enthusiasm, like even without taking the results into it,
yeah.
there's more enthusiasm on the left than there is on the right.
No question.
And
no
so,
question. But that's a, yeah, yeah.
And I think that's the problem is a lot of people stayed home in the presidential election too because there was this thinking that like well. Like you thought too, this guy's not going to
90% chance that
yeah, there were a lot of people who thought it was just a foregone conclusion, and that yeah. clearly wasn't the case.
People who weren't paying attention to 538. But I do think that
you guys are deep dive. I don't know. Is it going to be this political? I like it.
Yeah. Well, we'd like to. You know, we got to take the temperature of it.
All right, I got it.
I do think that his relationship with his daughter, if anything, is an indictment of his overall like inability to view women as any like full human being, because he has that like just weird
always
way
about
he's always talking about how hot she is and how like attractive
I don't know if
she
he's
is.
Always talking about how
he
hot
says
it is.
He says it enough that I don't think
I
any
know it's weird.
Would
it's
yeah,
weird.
Yeah, yeah.
It's obvious. I will give you that.
Yeah,
I will give you that.
All right,
it's weird. It's weird, but I do think she is a.
No, she's the. I feel like the one
a deflector shield a little bit, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But not
a little
I think,
bit. I don't
to
know.
Some people, I think most people can kind of see through it because mm-hmm. as a mother, they look at half the policies and they're like, "What? How could you look at this? Like the family yeah. separation thing. It took her so long to come out and say anything against it.
Right.
That they're just sort of like, oh, well, you do what is the most advantageous mm-hmm. for the administration rather than whatever her values are. But
yeah,
this we'll see deep. How it works.
This is deep. I love yeah. it.
If you like her so much, elect her to public office, guys. Don't.
Right.
All right. We're going to take another quick break and we'll be right back. And we're back. And on Friday, a gentleman named Randy Credico with dog in tow, the yes. Washington Post testified about his relationship with Roger Stone before a grand jury. This guy is very interesting. He's a comedian. He's also an associate of Roger Stone, also an associate of Julian Assange. Just this very weird mixture of, like, he's also a radio host. So he's sort of this mixture of political activist, commentator.
He's a Facebook friend of mine.
Facebook friend hey. Of Wayne's, most importantly. Yes. I didn't want to leave that to last.
Of course. But
some of the details of...
Well, first of all, for people who don't know, like what they are interested in is they see him as possibly being the connective tissue between WikiLeaks and Roger Stone.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Yes. And so, then he was in there denying that, right? Or he won't say, right?
He won't say.
Oh, wait, what happened? So he came out and like the press started asking him?
So he comes out, the press.
Out of the testimony,
out of
right.
testifying in front of Mueller. And the press asked how much of the questioning dealt with Assange. And he answered very little and was about to elaborate. And then his lawyer just said, don't. And that was it. So that was the end of that.
Right.
Just one detail that I love so much about he and Roger Stone's relationship.
Yeah.
So one of the messages they have on file is Roger Stone sending him a text.
By the way, Roger Stone, very down to earth.
Yes.
Very uh-huh. guy
just
next door.
Normal guy just with a normal Nixon back tattoo.
Yeah.
Yeah. He texted Randy Credico, I am so ready. Let's get it on. Prepare to die, cocksucker. Now, the circumstances of that text are amazing because Credico says it was when he found out that he was going to testify in front of the grand jury. And Roger Stone's version was that he had just learned that Credico had cancer and was depressed about it. And he was telling him to get ready to die, cocksucker, because that's just how he like treats his friends.
Right. The reason is Roger Stone hears that Credico has something that contradicts everything that Roger Stone's been saying publicly.
Right.
He gets a text. I'm so ready. Let's get it on. Prepare to die to cocksucker. What happened, Roger? Oh, he said he had terminal cancer.
Right.
That's why that seems far-fetched.
Right.
A little bit. I don't know. But that could be Roger Stone's trademark humor that's so nihilistic and morbid.
Yes.
I don't know.
And Credico was like, I don't have cancer. That's not true. None of this is true. So you're Facebook friends with Credico?
I've known him since the 80s.
He's a character.
Before he was political, he was just a comedian.
Right. Yeah.
And very good impressionist.
Yeah.
Like, Really good.
Really?
Yeah.
That's what I thought. I never heard him do his bit, but I remember reading things where he was warning the lawyers. He's like, hey, I do voices, and I might do it during my testimony. It's just my thing. And I was like, this is going to be amazing.
Yeah, no, he was really, he was on the A-list. If I'm not mistaken, I think he did the Tonight Show in the 80s with Johnny Carson, with the big guest for the young comedians at that time. But even I think at that point he was starting to... He was going after Reagan and all of that. And
right.
Yeah, one of my favorite impressions of his was he used to do an incredible David Brenner. I don't know if you know who that is. You don't?
No,
I don't think so, no.
He's okay.
I know Yul Brynner.
Yes. No relation. So he used to do that, and he would do, like, you know, Archie Bunker and Edith Bunker
and that kind of thing.
So, and then the next thing you know, he's like, oh, Wayne, I'm going to El Salvador or, you know, Nicaragua and write material for, like, the head of, not the Contras, the other guy.
The Sandinistas?
Yeah.
What do you mean, write material?
Like, do comments to help that guy politically. Ortega, I think that guy's name was.
Holy shit.
I think the guy's name was Daniel Ortega. I know that's in my head. I'm not looking it up. And so he went down there and would do rallies for him and, like, help him with his campaign.
For dictators.
Yeah. Well, he became very left. He's like a lefty. Left.
Yeah.
And then, but he does some good stuff, like, you know, like these draconian drug laws that gets,
people
who are, nonviolent drug offenders and stuff like that. He's very passionate. He's very funny. And he's just a weirdo. He's a comedian. It's just the weirdest political activist I've ever.
When you saw his name kind of start bubbling up in the news, were you kind of like, of course?
Of course, yeah.
Right.
it's literally every comedian just knows him as Credico. No one calls him Randy.
Oh, yeah, it's just Credico.
Like, Credico. Like,
of course, Credico. Of course. Wow. He's going to be on the Mueller investigation.
Right, somehow.
You know, it's the same guy trying to get on Evening at the Improv is like, it's insane. It's insane that I know.
Can you imagine he starts doing like material about testifying in the Mueller probe? Yeah. It's like, this guy's Mueller material.
But I will say he is consistent. He's not one of those, like, just if it's a Democrat or it doesn't matter to him.
Right.
He's like.
No, it seems like it seems like he's very, like, principled in what his beliefs are.
And
they
he had,
seem.
You know, he had a drug problem himself, and it's.
Right.
Credico.
Yeah. He's Credico.
I just love that he testified in front of a grand jury and had to bring a dog.
Right.
Like, he's like, hey, I got to bring a dog.
Classic Credico.
Did he travel with a dog a lot?
This is a new thing. I heard that he, like, rescued that dog from Chile. Like, he's just he's a world traveler. He's just I don't know how he has a passport at this point, but
one of the articles.
I really admire that guy. He's funny.
Yeah.
He's actually a funny.
Right. It's, like, just so weird, this overlap now. Of, like,
I actually
comedy
think
and the
he has that obsessive compulsive disorder. Is my take on
sure.
it. He's just like, once he's fixated on, he can't let it go.
Right.
Yeah. But I love the guy.
One of the sources that we are using for research on Credico uses this photograph that is just this, like, real buttoned up public hearing. And then a really, like, a screen accurate Greek philosopher.
Yeah, right.
Like, just, he's got this, like, long white beard. He looks like Gandalf the White, just with a lantern walking through the thing. And it says, Mr. Credico, dressed as the Greek philosopher Diogenes.
The cynic. He's the one who founded cynic philosophy.
Right.
So,
yeah.
And very layered.
I would say that the thing that seems to connect him, Stone, and Julian Assange is cynicism.
Right.
And in some cases, very justified cynicism. Miles.
Yes.
A new study has found four distinct personality types, and I'm fucking excited.
You know, there's the Myers-Briggs thing. And
which is bullshit.
Yeah.
Why are you saying it's bullshit?
It's... So it wasn't.
Is it Briggs?
It's Myers, actually.
Oh, it's Myers. Okay.
It was. It's just, there's been a lot of, like, psychology and psychological literature around the fact that there's no real scientific basis. It was more of a business thing that they created around to be like, oh, this is gonna.
But there
be
was.
Great
a, I remember even during Myers Briggs, there was another competing. Psychological stuff.
I think this is a never-ending battle to try and put humanity into buckets, and that's it. It's just we realize it becomes increasingly harder to do. But what's funny is that this study was actually conducted by a person who's a, like, avowed Myers-Briggs, like, cynic, like, he's a hater of it, and realizes, like,
does that affect your opinion about what you're going to hear about this?
Well, I guess the one of the reasons that sort of makes this different is that this person isn't claiming that everyone falls into one of these four types, like the Myers-Briggs, right. Like you're one of these 16 things. Mm-hmm. It's more the idea that people cluster into these four areas. And it's like, he doesn't want people to think that that's what they're saying. It's just that you're finding people begin to concentrate around, it's distributed.
These
he calls
four?
It more of lumps in the batter has an analogy to look at it. Like it's not, they're not separate.
Do you think it's interesting that they're both, that it's like 4 and 16, like it's 4 times 4.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
4 squared, yeah.
Who knows? That's the way I think about it.
Yeah. You're a big math guy then, huh?
Yeah.
Just start seeing the matrix.
Numerology.
Numerology.
Yeah. You should see my apartment. It's just on the glass. <Numbers. laughs>
What does it all mean? What does it all mean? But yeah.
And the other thing that makes me less suspicious of this is
less
that
suspicious.
Less suspicious, or mm-hmm. the thing that makes me less suspicious of this, other than that his main problem with Myers-Briggs is that it's not scientific and he's using actual like data on this data that he stole from like not stole but like got from Facebook is surveys. It,
let
and
me
shit
can
like
I ask
that.
You just a couple questions.
Sure.
Has this been published? Has this been peer reviewed? Is this any of that stuff? Or is this just a guy with an article?
It's a new paper in Nature Human Behavior.
So
it's like it's rigorous. It's a replicable study.
Okay,
so yeah, this isn't just so guys
that's
like
what I'm just saying.
And the other thing I was going to say is that the personality types are pretty boring. Like if they're not
okay,
telling
let's
you
hear
anything.
The four.
It's not
novel.
Whoa,
buckle up,
Wayne.
Buckle up,
Wayne. Let me hear the four.
Number one is average.
Wait, what is that?
Average. These people score high in neuroticism and extroversion, but score low in openness in terms of like being open to different points of view, I guess.
Right.
It is the most typical category, with women being more likely than men to fit into it.
To be average?
Yes.
Yeah. Sounds like a Trump thing he would say about a woman. Go keep going.
Right.
Reserved. This type of person is stable emotionally without being especially open or neurotic. They tend to score lower on extroversion, but tend to be somewhat agreeable and conscientious.
Mm-hmm. Wait, are you saying someone reserved is not extroverted? That's crazy.
do you believe this?
And you sure peer-reviewed?
Yeah.
Right.
Wow. This is insane.
Role models.
Insane by stating the obvious. Keep going.
It's also weird because this is the good one. This is the bad one. Like, because role models is one, and it's these people score high in every trait except neuroticism, and the likelihood that someone fits into this category increases dramatically as they age. Which I also like that it makes room for people changing, where, you know, there's not this like fatalistic, you are this person and that's just how you're going to go through life. It's like, no, you can adapt and mellow out and learn things. Then it says, these are the people who are dependable and open to new ideas. They're good people to have in charge of things. Women are more likely than men to be role models. So
as well as reserved.
Yes. Role models and average, I think, is what we've learned.
Yeah,
so men are more likely to be
reserved
and the fourth type, self-centered.
Oh.
These people score very high in extroversion.
You don't have to look at me when you say that. It's very unfair. I just met you, but yes, that did cut a little close to the bone.
But score low in openness, agreeableness, and conscientiousness.
Wait a minute.
Most teenage boys would fall into this category, which I also like that. That like, yeah, we're acknowledging that, you know, we all sucked as teenage boys.
We suck as a fucking 34-year-old man.
Yeah.
We're talking about you, Mr. Kavanaugh.
Right.
Right.
The number of people who fall into this category decreases dramatically with age.
Decreases.
Self-centered, yeah.
Which I think, more...
Yeah, you become a little more humble when suddenly you get a hip replacement.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
You realize, maybe I'm not invincible.
Yeah,
exactly. Maybe I will hold the handrail when I go down the stairs.
Right. But lumps in the batter is also a good characterization.
I feel like lumps in the batter is a terrible metaphor.
Because it's so like nebulous even then.
Yeah,
it's just like, it's lumps in the batter.
Well,
you know, I'm not saying you're one of these
first
things.
Of all,
you're a lump.
It seems like the batter is the biggest part of that.
That's a good point.
It's just,
yeah, but there's this lumps. I think that's why they're saying it's harder to do what like the Myers-Briggs is just saying, you fit in one of these things. And they're just saying these are four basic things that people are usually near or around.
But basically everyone's just floating in this batter soup.
In a way, yes. I mean, the way they put it is they say just to think of how people tend to concentrate in cities in the United States. So if you divide the country into four regions and then look at how population density is distributed, you'll likely find the highest concentration of people living are in dense cities. And they're saying They're describing, quote, what we're describing is the likelihood of being at certain parts of that distribution. We're not saying that everyone is in one of the four categories.
Just as a model of how human behavior tends to like look over in big groups, I think lumps in the batter seems accurate. It's not like claiming, okay, and then you're in this bucket or this bucket.
Right.
Then
some of your batter could be touching some of these.
Yeah. You might be in between lumps.
Maybe.
You might just be batter, you know?
I stand corrected. I thought it was a horrible metaphor, and now
you're coming around.
I'm coming around.
But I think there's a fifth personality type.
So there is a fifth personality type.
There's a fifth lump.
It's actually a speck, but it has a lot of gravitational pull. It is Mark Wahlberg. So we have learned over the weekend, Mark Wahlberg has shared his daily routine with the world, and it is fucking
what
bonkers.
Is going on with him?
He
what
wakes
time does
up
he wake up?
At 2:30 a.m. Praise.
Wait, hold on.
He wakes up at 2:30 a.m.
Doesn't say what time he goes to sleep?
It does not.
Okay. No. Already, I'm skeptical.
I know.
Right.
Praise at 2:45 for a half hour.
For a half
straight
hour?
Prayer. Yeah.
It's intense.
Then,
do you know what kind of religion he is?
Christian. Very, very Christian.
What, is he Catholic, bro?
Like,
what are you, Catholic,
what
bro?
What are you, Catholic, bro?
Have you heard of this guy, the Pope?
Yeah, have you heard of this, bro? You accept the Eucharist, bro?
That is one of the strangest facts that I think we will look back on in history is, like, he introduced the Pope. When the Pope visited America for the first time, Mark Wahlberg is who introduced him to America.
Well, he is known for those underwear ads.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, connection.
Yeah. Right.
Both of
we
them.
We know those guys.
Yeah.
And at 3:15.
Was it Calvin Klein?
Yeah.
Yes, Calvin Klein was Wahlberg.
Yeah. We're not talking about Pope John Paul.
I forget which one the Pope was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And what did Mark?
Pantifex.
That was pretty good. At 3:15 a.m., he has his first meal. This guy eats
so
fucking
much.
Constantly, but it's all like incredible health food that
Warren Buffett style.
Right.
No.
At 3:15 a.m., breakfast, I start out with steel oats, peanut butter, blueberries, and eggs for breakfast.
Wow.
Then I have a protein shake.
Sure.
Performance-inspired nutrition vanilla latte shake. It's like an acronym, but it doesn't, like, he writes it like an acronym with in all caps, but it doesn't, it,
that
the
would
acronym
just be
is PINVLS.
PINVLS.
Then 3 turkey burgers, 5 pieces of sweet potatoes.
Wait
at
a minute. 3:15
a.m.
That's
for breakfast.
Quite a breakfast.
But then he like works out for 4 hours.
From 3:40 to 5:15.
Right.
Then 5:30, post-workout meal. This guy, like, how afraid of death is he that he's like, I have to get up at 2:30 and just experience as much of the day as possible? Because in those videos,
he has kids, doesn't he? He has multiple kids.
Yeah, lots of kids. And that was something that I was noticing. Like, I will sometimes get up super early because my kids get up super early and I want to get shit done before they wake up. But, like, there's no mention of, like, and then I have to, like, take the kids to school or anything. It's just, like, I get up at 2:30 because, you know, fear of death.
Do we have two meals before 6:30?
Yeah. Like, huge fucking meals.
3 turkey burgers?
Yeah. He eats more whole foods before he wakes up than I eat in, like, an entire week.
I know you guys are mocking him. I'm admiring him. Keep going.
I can only mock because it's so mind-blowing to me that someone has, they're like, let me set my alarm. Oh, what time are you waking up tomorrow? 2:30 a.m. And you're like, what?
Yeah.
To do what?
You work on the Today Show.
Yeah,
right.
That's
exactly.
The only reason.
Exactly.
Yeah, or like morning radio. Yeah, exactly. Those are the people who wake up. And then he has family time at 11 and 5:30, picks up the kids at 3.
Oh, he does pick up the kids. I missed that.
Yeah, and then you also miss that after his workouts, he has a cryotherapy session where he chills in a room that's 150 to below zero.
Uh-huh.
So.
Wait, oh, that's weird to you?
I don't know. I guess.
I guess.
I just, like, when you have those kinds of resources where you're like, yeah, I can wake up, I can eat. Like, he has, like, this, like, trainer with him. There's, like, a doctor with him, like, all day. Then he does his cryotherapy.
Doesn't he also have, like, a burger business?
Yes. Wahlburgers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a reason 3 turkey burgers are in there, I'm sure.
Right, I guess.
3 turkey Wahlburgers.
Cross promotion.
Yeah, there's video of him, like, explaining, like, his workout routine with the doctor behind him, and the doctor's like treating his body like it's a horse's body.
He like,
he,
like a slap.
Slaps
he's like,
him
yeah,
on the
there's
back.
My freak study, my experiment.
It's so weird.
Somehow I convinced him to wake up at 2:30 every day.
Yeah. He had to convince the Equinox to open extra early for him. 4 a.m. club, bro.
Yeah. Well, now he's got his own, when he's on the road, but it looked like his own home gym was like some,
puts Equinox to shame.
It was, I mean, hey, look, you know.
How cold was the room?
150 degrees below zero.
Right.
That's, What?
Yeah.
How does that work?
You need like an entire city block's worth of electricity just to like keep that room doing.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know someone who does.
That room is raising the Earth's temperature a half a degree.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like that's the threshold. We're going to look back and we're like, how come all that irreversible climate change happened? Oh, this fucking asshole named Mark Wahlberg had to keep a room at 150 degrees below zero. He had his own mountaintop removal coal mining operation.
Do you know who's the Anthony Robbins? Are you familiar with the
Tony Robbins?
Tony Robbins.
Yeah.
6'7".
Yeah. But he has in his house like this, I can't even describe it. It's like a manhole goes straight down and it's freezing water that he just dips in and then comes back out.
Like an ice bath. Yeah.
That's like I see
not
athletes.
Even a bath. It's like a little
it's
cylinder.
Air?
No, it's water.
Oh,
it's
and
ground
he just,
level.
Like, dips himself in,
yeah,
comes
completely
out,
dips right. in under, and then comes back out. But I can't believe it's 150 degrees below zero.
Well, yeah. That's when you have that Wahlberg money. You know, you're not doing ice baths like some common professional athlete.
Yeah, you're treating your body like a piece of meat that is being like prepared by one of those chefs that uses like scientific like.
It seemed like it would burn.
Well, he told Ellen it helps remove inflammation and can improve sleep.
Yeah. No, of course. Of course again, bro.
Yeah.
Wayne, it's been so fun having you, man.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Where can people find you, follow you?
Well, I will tell you. I'm on something called Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Social, the microblogging site.
Yes.
I'm a fan.
Yep.
I write there, too, sometimes.
It's at Fetterman.
Okay. Wow. You got in early.
Yep.
Wow.
I'm an early adapter. By the way, they jumped. I think they came online in 2006.
Yeah, around there.
Yeah, so I think it was 2008, so a couple years in.
There you go.
Still wasn't a problem. And then, you know, I have the WayneFetterman.com website.
Yeah.
And also I have a new podcast that I'm doing.
Oh, great. What is it?
It's just we talk about the daily news with a couple guys. No. It's just a new idea.
It's the history of stand-up, right?
Yeah, it's the history of stand-up.
You were teaching a class on that, right?
Believe it or not, yes. This is a new thing in my life.
That's
amazing.
Awesome.
At USC. Where they have, you know, the Trojan is their mascot.
Yes.
O.J. Simpson is an alumni.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so many others.
But yeah, it's just if you're into the history of stand-up, we go from vaudeville right up to, we call it Netflix, is like we feel the big.
It's like the new, right.
Of what's happening right now.
Yeah. Right.
But if you want
any era. You guys talk about Premium Blend?
Yeah.
Does that make it in there?
Sure.
Was a big
was
fan as a kid.
I
yeah.
I, was a fan I did it. Yeah. Yeah. Mitch Hedberg and I were on the same episode.
Oh, wow.
You know that guy?
I've heard of him.
Well, yeah. I don't know. You don't know David Brenner. I don't know.
No, I definitely know Mitch Hedberg for sure. Wait, who is David Brenner anyway?
He's kind of the first full-on observational comedian. Pre-Seinfeld.
Okay.
Pre-Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of, like one of his jokes would be like the sign that says, only seeing eye dogs allowed. Like,
right.
Who is that sign for?
Right.
That would be a Brenner-esque
Right. Okay. It's like, well, there's like, they've just cut down their customer base. It's very small.
No, but who would even
see it?
Yeah. You're blind. You can't see that.
This guy. How do I not know David Brenner?
Miles.
Yep.
Where can people find you?
Find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray.
What's a tweet you've been enjoying?
There are a couple of things. Just around the like Brett Kavanaugh thing. It's amazing. I remember during his confirmation, Kamala Harris asked very specifically, did you have any kind of interaction with someone from this law firm, Mark Kazowitz's law firm, about the Mueller probe?
Can I do my impression of Kavanaugh?
Yes.
Well, if you could tell me the person, maybe then I would be... Like, you would never answer yes or no.
Right. Exactly.
Do you have a person in mind?
I can't recall, you know? And she's like, I have an email, but I can't say because this is classified. Anyway, so Whitney Cummings said, pretty amazing that Brett Kavanaugh can remember names of 65 women he knew in high school 35 years ago, but not whether or not he had a conversation about Robert Mueller in the past year.
Huh.
And then another one from Ian Milheiser. So to summarize, a confessed serial sexual predator nominated a man who is credibly accused of attempted rape to be the key vote to strip women of reproductive freedom. Yeah, let's just hope that this woman has her day to testify in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee and we can bring some respect to this process because it was looking like a runaway train. But we don't know still. Things could change.
All right. Some tweets I've been enjoying. I will leave now. Cryptic Callie tweeted to the tune of Destiny's Child, say my name. Spell my name, spell my name. It's right there in the email. It's not a hidden detail. The spelling doesn't change. And that goes out to my wife, who's, for some reason, everybody thinks her name is spelled without an H. And they will constantly email her at her first name in the email address and spell it without the
That's
H.
Like when people spell my handle right to tweet at me and then misspell either my first or last
it's
name.
Like, I'm like, what the fuck is happening?
All right.
And then from Bob Volfoff tweeted, I believe in disconnecting and relaxing after work, so I only do three things once I'm home after a long day at the office. One, think in great detail about every mistake I've ever made. Two, look inward and catalog all my weaknesses like a maniac. And three, chill. And you can follow us at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes, where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as the song. You can also find that information in the information about the episode on whatever you are listening to this on. Miles, what song are we writing?
We played some Dirty Art Club last week, and I just want to play another song off one of their his album, Basement Seance, that I really like, called Queen Persephone. So this is Queen Persephone by Dirty Art Club.
All right. We're going to ride out on that. We will be back tomorrow because it is a daily podcast. We'll talk to you then. Bye.
First, I just dabbled with it, you know? Like everybody else in Hollywood.
What is real in this spinning universe of realities? Through the brutal microscope of expanded consciousness.